Do you think it's possible to redeem the kind of things that we've done?
Redeem? I don't see much use in that.
Booker, are you afraid of God?
No. But I'm afraid of you.
I mean, I'd greatly appreciate it if you would assist.
Perhaps you should ask him. I imagine he has a greater interest in getting there than I do.
I suppose he does. There's no point in asking.
Why not?
Because he doesn't row.
He doesn't row?
No, he doesn't row.
Ah, I see what you mean.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our second special episode, spoiler cast. Here
yes.
We are, and today
on the couch
shell with the proper cover of BioShock Infinite.
Yes,
we're doing a spoiler cast for BioShock Infinite, aka what Donovan coined as intimate.
Yes,
with Infinite,
getting intimate with it, with BioShock. Yes.
So in this spoiler cast, again, your last warning. If you want to turn away,
please don't check this out unless you have already completed BioShock Infinite, because we are going to spoil the game if you have
spoil the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And it's a great game. You don't want to spoil it for you. You want to play through the entire thing. Play at least on normal. That's my suggestion. Don't do like Donovan.
Oh, is that a knock
mode.
Already?
Yes, it was. But anyway, yeah. Okay, your last chance. Turn away.
Turn spoiler away now, because here come the spoilers.
Intimate with Infinite.
Yes.
All right, anyway, Donovan, we both finished the game, and it's been out for some time now.
It's like 3 or 4 weeks almost now, I guess, it's been out, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're a little behind in that sense, but it's never too late to talk about this kind of stuff.
So, nearly 6 years in development brought us to this point, gave us the final product, and, I don't know, what are your initial thoughts on it?
Well, I mean...
Booker, Elizabeth, the world of Columbia.
I got sucked in really quickly, And I mean, I had just come off playing BioShock 1, finishing that for the first time. So yeah, you want to talk about getting late in the game. But yeah, I mean, I came straight off BioShock 1, went into BioShock Infinite, and got sucked in immediately. The relationship with Booker and Elizabeth is top-notch, like the way the narrative is portrayed.
You jump in from a world like Rapture.
Mm-hmm.
And but it begins the same way,
in a sense.
I mean,
you go to little
for
like
anyone. Obviously, if you've watched, if you're watching this, you finish the game. It begins with a man and a lighthouse,
yeah,
as it always does.
Yeah.
And very reminiscent. I love the initial setting. You know, you enter the lighthouse, and you know, obviously, you bring us the girl, wipe away your debt.
Right.
But the you walk in. You know, wash your hands away from the sin. You can look in the basin to see your face.
Right.
Something you can never do with
BioShock 1.
Initial,
yeah.
with was his name Jack? Was it Jack? I believe it was Jack. Maybe I'm wrong. It was a J, Jack, John, whatever
yeah.
it was. But, you know, and then you go up the stairs, and that character's dead. You know, it sort of cements what you're doing here, and then you got the code, it calls in, you know, the...
Yeah, and that scene, again, I mean, I was not expecting
mm-hmm.
anything like that. You know, you ring these bells and then all these lights start coming from the sky. That was... I'm like, took my time to pan the camera around because
mm-hmm.
I was like, already that was a jaw-dropping
yeah.
moment.
Mm-hmm. And the whole rain and I've always loved the initial BioShock sort of prepared us what we were getting into, but the way the creators... It's because, and I'm going to refer it as creators, not just Levine, because there's so many people that come into these games.
Right. And obviously he's a strong driving force, but
well, the way
he's got a great team.
The way they like to make games, and yes, it's his initial vision, but this game, was in development for a long time. A lot of people hadn't put, and a lot of people came and went as well.
Oh, yeah.
But let's back it up a bit. I knew personally right away there was something up with the people in the boat, because I knew they didn't react to me at all, and they were referring to me almost, they were talking about me, but almost like I wasn't there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I picked up on that.
Because he doesn't row, you know?
And I definitely picked up on some of that stuff too. But I was, you know, you're just going along for the ride, right? Mm-hmm. You guys, you know, they hand you the box. You're like, okay, you know, like everything's kind of established in a similar kind of sense that it was in the first Bioshock too. You're on the plane, you get your package, you know, you've got your little bit of stuff there. So you're on your way, you know, you got your gun, you got your picture.
And so once you get shot up and you get your first image of Columbia there, I mean,
well, the reveal.
Yeah, the reveal.
You know, you go up and you've got the strings, mm-hmm. and then you break through the clouds, and then you get the little twinkling piano coming through, and
which was in all their marketing material for the most part, other than the later trailers with the Beast of America and things like that. But that piano sort of theme, that's where it's. That's actually really the only time you hear that piano theme until the very end,
right?
Which is, you know, it ends and begins with that. But the first image, once you get out, and it's very reminiscent of the Bathysphere in Rapture. You come out of that rocket chair, and even as you're coming down in the thing, you're bombarded with those images. It really sets the stage for that America, but Catholic, Christian.
Sure. And I mean, and at the same time, what a stark contrast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's so much brighter than Rapture. I mean, obviously you're not underwater, but I mean, like,
but the worlds these games give us are, they're really impressive.
And so well realized.
They draw you in right away. Yeah. And that's some games never do it, for instance. Other games take a long time. But right away, you're like, this is a world that I'm a part of. And, you know, Rapture, whether it's under, you see it aftermath. But here, you're jumping right into the game before anything takes place.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of spellbound. You're just taking it all in. And it's not a game.
And
where
if you notice, they control your momentum through that world. Like, it gives you a moment. We'll get to what happens before with the baptism and stuff. But, you know, they latch into the other thing. You know, you can't just rush through that area.
No, absolutely not. No. And the game doesn't really let you do that very often either, where, like, it almost purposefully gives you those opportunities to kind of take things in,
mm-hmm.
when they're not rushing a bunch of enemies at you.
Sure. but as soon as you get off there, that song, The Chain Unbroken,
right,
with the choir, opera,
the choral choir.
I loved it. We're going to use it in this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to end with that. But I remember I didn't even want to leave that area, that imagery thing. And I wanted to, it's sort of telling the story about everything, and you find your first voxophone there,
right,
for
right.
instance, you know, the Love the Sinner one, which is telling, right?
Which, and I wrote that down even. The first voxophone you find, it's kind of
Love the Sinner, for He is You.
Right, and I think that's a very telling thing, but you don't realize it on your initial playthrough.
Yeah, it's telling that subsequent playthroughs are almost necessity to show how much you've missed.
Yeah.
Almost.
And the title kind of says that right off the bat, even though you don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think a lot of people were like, okay, can't wait for Bioshock Infinite. But in the back of my mind, I was like, well, what does Infinite really mean? Mm-hmm. And you don't really fully understand that until you're a good chunk of the way through.
Well, this is a theme-driven game, and that point is never more apparent until you finally reach the finale and everything comes together, and it just works so well. What did you think? I don't know. It's hard to tackle this because the ending is so fresh in our minds, and that's the thing that obviously garners the most attention, but there's so much else to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Lutesses were...
But let's sort of go it chronologically.
Well, you bump into the Lutesses. They're, like, pretty much the first
characters
that you bump into as far as, like, narrative-style characters. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you get that at first...
But you see,
after the boat.
But there's the racial overtones that are reminiscent of the times in Columbia. And Fink at the ball goes to show you these things. And, you know, the Lutesses show up before that, telling you with the heads or tails thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the chalkboard there, you've chosen heads. I think I counted it's up to 122 times. So that means...
Well, because the whole back of it is filled in.
Filled in as well, because he turns. And then I love it, because if you sit there and talk and lead, and stay there with them, they'll just keep throwing out quips. They're like, we can't leave till you do. And they'll sit there and say, further on when you get to the Blue Oyster Bar, you try to shoot them, missed again. No, I suggest you don't. You're going to have enough problems. You're going to need all the friends you can get.
Right.
Because I just, bang, I'm shooting at them.
I didn't do that, but I did wait. I played through the ending twice, just because I wanted to take some notes. But there's the part where, I guess I can say this anyway because we're going to be spoiling stuff anyway. But when they're taking Elizabeth through the portal, and if you rush up to them, they're still talking, right? And the hole's kind of doing this, and it's like, I don't want to jump through if it's not stable, and all this kind of thing. If you stand there for a minute, there's quite a few lines of dialogue.
I know.
They shoot back and forth.
I did. I listened to
it. And I was like, well, this is hilarious, because I'm just kind of standing there, and they're like...
Those two are definitely stars in the game.
Absolutely.
And they're more... You obviously know they're important, but their importance is not really prevalent until the very end, when you see how they fit in.
I can't remember the actor's name that plays the brother, but... You got Jennifer Hale as
oh, is that who it
is? Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. And so, for those who don't know, Jennifer Hale is female Shepard in Mass Effect 3.
So
among other things.
Yeah. And I had kind of, I wasn't thinking about it when I first started playing it, and then I talked to Kirk. He's like, Shepard's doing the voice of the Lucas sister, right? And I was like, oh shoot.
So yeah, there's racial tones, not just against blacks, but all the
Irish,
which is reminiscent of gangs in New York at the time. That was in. But this is 1912. 1912, that's right.
Once you get to the point where you meet Fitzroy and you get to that faint section of the game and you start hearing those things over the PA where it's like 16-hour work days. And
he's a character in himself. And that's the thing. It really follows the same structure that the initial Bioshock had in many ways. By Fink is kind of... I suppose
like he's a stepping stone up to
like a Sander Cohen almost.
Yeah.
Where Sander Cohen, he's very important, and a lot of people think he steals the show in many ways, other than the big reveal on Bioshock 1 with Andrew Ryan. But Fink has a substantial part in the middle there.
Absolutely, and really it's the end of that part of the story where things really start to get crazy, because that's where
I'd say the beginning, because you're introduced to your first major tear.
But that's what I mean. The tear.
Let's back up a bit.
I guess, because the tear that...
with Chen Lin.
That's what I mean.
The gunsmith.
Yeah.
But let's back up a bit and sort of how we get there to the initial meeting. Obviously, you go through a bombardment thing. Fink stops you. He wants you to throw the ball at the couple there. Interracial couple, which is against...
I'm sure there's no way of not picking the 77...
No, there's no way. You're right. That's the thing that comes in. You're given the illusion of choice, but it's all an illusion.
Right.
In this vein, in this theme, which we'll talk about later. Let's just flash forward. You go all the way through to find Elizabeth. One stop over. I really liked the one section that you had to go through where you get the murder of Crow's Vigor. And it's sort of like the white supremacist area with John Wilkes Booth statue and the Crow guy.
Yeah.
And all of them are thinking you have to take them out. I really liked that area. It was pretty cool.
No, that was a pretty cool spot too. We actually didn't really talk about the meeting, like when you actually meet up with Elizabeth.
I want to get to. Yeah. I mean, because that's obviously important. But I just thought that was a really cool part how they introduced that. Like, did you think they did a good job of introducing the enemy types? Like, you got the fireman before that.
Right.
And then you got the crow coffin sort of guy.
Sure. I don't know. I just kind of felt like new enemies just kind of showed up. I mean, they had the handyman was on display at the fair or whatever it was.
But you don't really learn exactly what they are till later.
Later. And then you see that
through a voxophone, too. Fink talks about his melding of machine and man,
right,
which he learns through the Lutece field and everything. But again, we'll get to that in a minute. So you pass through all this here. Eventually, you get to what's the island?
Monument Island.
Monument Island, right? And she lives in the statue. She's obviously chained up.
Yeah.
And you fall in, but you notice that they've been watching. They're actually scared of her.
Right.
And
she has no idea, of course.
No, she isn't. But you get a glimpse of her power there as you're watching her. And, you know, she whacks
because that's the part that opens with the Revenge of the
Jedi.
I
think it's a really cool introduction to her character. And obviously, to me, throughout the game, she's a reflection of what you're going through as well, through things that happened to her, whether it's her costume and her... Like, Booker is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But the tale is sort of told through her eyes.
But Booker is also who he is as a result of what he's done.
Yes.
And we don't really realize that until later.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, things really start to get crazy when you start going through the first tear.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there's no turning back at that point. Mm-hmm. That's one thing about this game I noticed about the save feature is that it saves for every chapter point you do.
Which I hated, because...
But it doesn't let you go back.
What?
Like, you can't go back to a previous chapter with what you've got. Like, if you go back to one of those chapter points...
No, you can. That's... It keeps all your progress. Yeah.
Not when I did it.
No, you can, because I went... That's how I got the... I missed one box phone and one sightseer.
Yeah?
Yeah, and after I finished the game, I went back to... I went all the way from the beginning.
Really? And it was like New
Game
Plus?
Through a chapter select, yeah. As long as you don't start a new game to erase and it'll start doing the chapters again.
Right.
As long as you just go through that chapter select, you can.
Hmm.
But of course, that's really here or there.
Right.
Well, that's game stuff. But Elizabeth's such a strong character, and she's really the vehicle that pushes the narrative and the theme of Bioshock Infinite.
Hmm.
She's got a really cool look.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love her character design.
She's really naive at first.
At first, yep. Yeah, she really, like, grows and...
But she's been locked in this place, and they've been studying her for the entire time.
So, yeah, as soon as she's let out...
And Songbird. What'd you think about Songbird?
Oh, I think he's awesome.
It's really cool.
Yeah. And I do believe that there's a person in there.
No, there is.
Absolutely.
Again, if you're talking about... It's just an advancement of the handyman.
Yeah.
Slash, you know, allude to the end. Big Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the technology comes from.
Right.
The melding of man and machine, right? This is just a different or an advancement of that. So, yeah, from there, you end up on the bay, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's these... It's not shy about showing you so much of this world. And it furthers those themes of, you know, there's the racist overtones. And
when the game gets dirtier and dirtier,
mm-hmm.
the further you get, mm-hmm. you know, like the... It's like, again, as soon as you go through that first tear, sort of, for the Chen storyline where you're going to get the weapons and stuff, that's it, man. As soon as you start going through the tears...
But yeah, that's sort of descending into the dirty part, because all this beauty and high society comes with a cost.
Yeah.
And there's such a class hierarchy system, which is very realistic. That's the thing. This game carried a lot of complaints and criticism for its racism,
but it's
racial tones, but it's... Indicative of the times.
Exactly.
This is exactly how it was.
Yeah, and I don't think that they went too far with it.
I don't either.
No,
I welcome games that take a chance.
And I don't think any of it was offensive, unless you're really, like, trying to be offended. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, sure, there are racial things going on, but it's all part of that world. The storytelling wouldn't be as effective if all of that stuff wasn't also going on.
No, because it also gives rise to what the Vox Populi are.
Exactly.
The rebellious faction in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Which you learn as you descend. I mean, sure, Elizabeth eventually learns why you're taking her,
mm-hmm.
where you are. You're not telling her the whole truth.
So, this kind of just popped into my head. Like, as soon as you go through that first tear, are you basically creating two worlds from that point?
Well, yes. You're opening the infinite theme.
Right.
And the world of themes. She says, I don't think we're going to be able to go back. And
exactly.
She alludes to this all the time, that she wasn't just creating possibilities, or she was, that they were things that she was making her imagination come to life,
mm-hmm.
almost. Like, there was an infinite amount of
world. Well, she says at one point she used to be able to open tears whenever she wanted, mm-hmm. whereas now it's like...
Well, it varies, it seemed.
Yeah.
But also the voxophones allude to that. One of the most telling ones is when you first find her, the Lutece one, it seems the universe doesn't like the pee mixed with her.
Right.
And that's the essence of her power. No, the essence of her power is the fact that she's not from that era that she's in now.
Mm.
She's from a different era, which the ending is you get to. And since she's from there, and you see that... The Chen Lin thing, as you jump through times and you open that initial tear, it's actually quite a gruesome part, actually, as you descend through that prison.
Sure, that Chen story arc is, like, really kind of, really dark.
And you open up and he's
and all
just,
you're trying to do is help
like, he's just fucked up. Like, his face is beat to a pulp and he just sort of slithers off that chair with all that blood and stuff around
him.
Which opens up something else as well. This game had received a lot of criticism for its violence. Some believe it was needless at times, whether it's the assassinations with
the Skyhook
and stuff like that. What do you think?
Honestly, it's nothing I haven't seen before in other games. So why take it out on this one?
Yeah, like, I'm not comfortable here. Again, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching. This is our, I know we said we were going to do it last time with our video cast. That didn't work. This is working, but it's hard to find a, unless you got a desk and some nice chairs, it's tough.
We need a studio. We'll get
like,
there.
Like, we're not only intimate with Infinite, we're intimate with each other right now. You know, we're on a couch, we're a little too close for comfort.
Whatever.
And it's slightly warm in here.
That's because you didn't want any birds on the tape.
No one wants to hear the birds chirping. Although the hummingbird is, in essence, getting back on topic, part of what the whole theme, if you notice, they throw the hummingbird in. It's actually, it shows up right at the beginning. After you do your initial baptism and you're walking through
right,
and we're all
yeah.
talking about it, you see the three statues of Washington.
Well, there's
Jefferson.
One of the videos is just of a hummingbird.
That's right, later on.
Yeah.
And it's sort of how a hummingbird can stay in motion. And it sort of alludes, it goes with the theme hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, back on topic. Yeah, I guess you descend into the I don't know, what word am I looking for here?
Oh, the darker side of the game.
The dark side with Fane, you know, the work. It's actually quite entertaining, you know. These people bid on work and the time and how long it's going to take to do these jobs and stuff. And obviously that's the darker side. That's where everything gets made. The security, the
we well, see
the they buy, things
the
from.
Assembly line, with
that's
the workers
right.
going right, and all that stuff,
and people that live in Colombia that can't, you know, maintain that lifestyle have to work and descend here, and they work to the bone actually, and that's where the rise of the Vox Populi, because in the current Colombia, the initial thing, the Vox Populi have all been quelled. They're
completely segregated.
Well, and they're controlled.
Yeah.
For the most part. Like, Fitzroy's there.
Right.
But she's been accused of the Comstock murder, which we completely glazed over the whole Slate thing, which is the first telling thing. Like, Slate says Comstock made up. And we didn't really talk about Comstock either.
Not to start with.
No. Like, what do you think about Comstock? He's sort of the Andrew Ryan of this.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's a fanatic in a sense, especially when you
the
hear...
The prophet.
Yeah. When you hear the preachy voxophones... That's where you really hear his sort of fanatical side.
But you learn how Columbia came to be the Dollars of Washington.
Well, sure,
and
yeah.
The time it took to make his dream realized. He's a very cool character, but he definitely wasn't as strong at the end as, say, Andrew Ryan was.
No, but that confrontation you have with Elizabeth and him was... a startling moment for me anyway.
Sure, but I mean throughout he's not as prevalent and echoing it. His sort of diatribe is taken over at certain points by Fink and by Fitzroy, for instance. But let's just go through the story and then we'll get through our thoughts and stuff on the characters, I suppose. You know, you go into the world where the Vox Populi are just taking over Colombia now, and it shows you a different side.
Well, right. I mean, you come out of that one tear, your nose is bleeding, you're not really sure what's going on, and all of a sudden you're a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
And there's posters of you up on walls and stuff like this, and, like, you're actually supposed to be dead.
And you're, well, you're the hero of the Vox Populi, so that forces Fitzroy to turn on you, and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Which takes you all the way through, and then you open another tear, do you not? Or is that the final one?
I think that's the final one when you move the... It's the one where the weapons or the machines...
Yes, his tools.
Right. All his tools are not there or where they're supposed to be in this other universe. So
that's
you open
right.
that tear, go through it, and that's when you come out into the...
But you're struggling to understand because in this final timeline that is opened up, they're dead. They've been killed because they're no longer needed. And Elizabeth starts to see the... Like, she gets all gung-ho about helping the Vox Populi and going against Comstock, who's her supposed father.
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me, But she starts to see the error of her ways and how these things have consequences. And she didn't intend to it. And she's starting to regret it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that carries on further into the story as well.
And she evolves. Help me out. I can't remember. You get on the Zeppelin after killing Fitzroy.
Mm-hmm.
You take the thing, and the songbird attacks you, and you crash.
Right.
And it shows Lutessa's again trying to... That song that keeps showing up every night.
Right. Cage.
That's right.
Which you don't really realize until...
You know what? I think we should just go to the ending and show how all that relates to some of the stuff we're talking about.
Right.
Like, you get to the battleship, your confrontation with Comstock, and it's...
Okay, yeah, and this is the moment that I was like, whoa, I actually played this part twice through when I first got to it, because when it gets to the part where he kind of grabs Elizabeth and he's like, he's trying to get you to tell her about what happened to her finger.
That's right.
And it doesn't give you any other option except to intervene.
That's right.
And that's where Booker kind of snaps a little bit and ends up killing Comstock mm-hmm. by smashing his face into the...
But before that, he's already said it always ends in blood with you.
Right.
And to be honest, that was the one... There's been hints. That was the one spot. I seen it coming.
Yeah.
But obviously, I didn't see everything coming.
No. And I mean, I was kind of shocked that it was just kind of over like that. Mm-hmm.
But by then, you've already overlapped the scenario with the terror with Elizabeth that shows what happens when you actually abandon her. In Comstock House.
Is that not after that moment?
No, it's before that.
Oh, okay.
That's before, which I think is important. We got to touch on that before we get to the ending. You know, you
right,
get
where
through,
Songbird takes her away, and then you got to chase after her, and after all of a sudden it's like...
That's right. You cross the bridge, and all of a sudden it's completely different. It's still the same area, but it's different.
It's winter.
Snow air and stuff.
Yeah.
Which really introduced a lot of the elements from Bioshock 1, some of the horror elements, because you're going through the Boys of Silence and the creepy sort of asylum feel mm-hmm. of the area. And it was creepy.
Oh, absolutely. It really was starting to register like how much the game changed when you're in that sort of final act of the game and you start to remember what the beginning of the game looked like mm-hmm. and you're like, whoa, like this.
It really
is dark.
And it changes. You go from destruction with the initial beauty, the destruction with the Vox Populi of taking down the world to this just
bleak future.
Bleak and horrors have been created.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth has created.
And then you start finding the tapes of Elizabeth.
That's right. And her face. Like, again, you start to see...
Well, you see she's got, like, the bruise under
the
her bruise eye.
The bruise and the eye makeup that... it really gives her, like, an ethereal look. Like,
yeah.
She's starting to look demonized, almost. And although it's been no time at all, but it's been years for her. Well, and this timeline that Booker's left her.
Yeah.
And she's been warped and changed. And obviously, Comstock's gone by this point.
Mm-hmm.
And she's taken over. And this is what she's created.
Yeah. This is the... Sort of the bad ending,
mm-hmm.
as it were.
And eventually you push through and all that. And there was some scary parts.
Well,
like
that's
there was
where,
part
that's
where
the
that
old
one,
Elizabeth gives you the
that's
cage
right.
card. And that's
right. But you see, she shows you the glimpse of the future, how the seed of the prophet will rain down, sit atop the throne of man and rain down fire.
Rain down the fire, right, yeah.
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But she gives you the glimpse into that future. And that is that future. But what could happen? That they've been talking about since the beginning. And then you push through and you're given the thing and then you save Elizabeth. She makes the decision to kill Comstock.
Oh, yeah,
nothing you can do to stop her,
yeah.
But now you're getting a grasp on her power. She's sort of mastered it, so to speak.
In a sense, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get her out of that test.
But she's also coming to grips with... She can see the timelines at that point. And she knows... She doesn't quite know the actual outcome,
mm-hmm.
but she almost... Rather than reacting to things as a young girl would, she's reacting to things almost as a guide to you.
Well, she grows
up. Like, she knows what's coming.
Yeah.
She knows what's coming, and she's just echoing your surprise sometimes as... She's almost turning into, like, a prophet of sorts.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember thinking to myself at one point during the ending section of the game, and I'm like, I kind of felt like... As she's kind of leading you towards the rapture area of the game. And I'm like, okay, you flipped your wig, girl.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep following you anyway.
Well, you kill Comstock in that area that you were talking about. See that shut off?
Yeah.
I'm going to press play again. Keep talking.
All right. So, yeah, after you kill Comstock in that one... I guess that's after you you rescue her, you get to the top, you get to the section with Comstock where he tries to get you to tell her the truth that you don't remember. You kill Comstock, and then you get out to the main part of the Zeppelin where you've got to have the big fight at the end. You finally get through
that. Well, yeah, so you get through that final battle where eventually you get control of Songbird, which
right.
is quite cool.
Which only lasts
And you
for...
take down the thing, and it's a difficult battle, but that's essentially the last battle.
Right.
Last battle. You control him. He takes out the...
The statue.
No, the siphon.
The siphon thing, right.
Which is taking the power, and he plans to channel it or whatever. But upon destruction, then Songbird, does he go to attack? I can't remember.
Well, yeah, because the whistle kind of like sparks or whatever. And
that's
it's like,
right.
I've lost control of Songbird.
But
and she's like, oh, don't worry about it.
Well, it's not worried,
she
but
starts
she
glowing.
The thing.
She starts glowing
yeah.
After that really cool explosion of the siphon. Yeah. The bird flies up and she just kind of goes... Whoosh.
So she takes... And this is the beginning of the end.
And this is basically where my jaw...
Yeah, when she pulled her rapture... I was like, oh my god, this is Rapture. This is Bioshock 1. It was such a cool, like, fan moment.
Yeah.
And,
but not just a fan moment, just, like, almost like a series moment, you know?
But
like,
it also, at first, I actually thought it was just pure fan service because yeah. we've been ignoring the similarities between the two games for so long.
Yeah.
Now we're just facing it head on, and I was like, okay. And she transfers, but she says goodbye to Songbird as it dies in the depths of
yeah.
Rapture's water or the ocean.
It's a mercy killing.
It is, more or less, but she actually cared about the thing because
oh,
it
sure.
did keep her alive.
Absolutely. I mean, it was like the only interaction she had. Yeah, the only friend she had. She's cooped up in this tower.
But right away, when you're in that world and that shit happened, the music sort of playing, that old music, and you're like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
So you travel, but you... The way Elizabeth's talking, you get the sense that she knows what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, there's like a switch that flips
mm-hmm.
when you destroy the siphon, and she's unlocked, and now she's kind of like, just follow me, you know?
Yeah, so you go through the bathysphere, and
okay,
it's funny, the quick quip that he throws out, a city under the ocean. I mean, what he's, you know, gotta be crazy to do this.
Yeah. Now, again, I want to touch briefly on the whole bathysphere thing because, you know, we brought up earlier, we were talking about the fact that you
yeah.
have to be Ryan's DNA.
Ryan's DNA, if you know, to even run the bathysphere, which we'll get to in the ending. But you're right, upon reflection, that you can operate the bathysphere.
Now, that didn't occur to me when I was playing mm-hmm. it. That was something that got brought up in, like, I was watching podcasts and stuff about this later on. But I'm trying to figure out, do they explain that at all?
No.
No.
That's the one thing about this ending before we tackle it. There's just enough answered and enough left abstract in my eyes that it's nearly perfect. I think the theme's handled so well. And... You know, you don't need all the questions answered for you. If you want to think about it, they're there.
And that's what I mean. Like, I think what your point is there is that it's very thought-provoking.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself helps to make the ending even better.
Mm-hmm. Like, there is right answers there if you want to really do the research, but pretty much everything that the story guides you with is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can come to proper conclusions, even if they deviate a little bit from the path.
Mm-hmm.
But so you just start jumping through the timelines and you're like, you see stars and you end up back where the game started, essentially.
Yeah.
And
twice.
Elizabeth's talking to you and, you know, let's just get out of here.
But she's enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, she's like enlightened.
Well, she sees stars and she says they're all gateways. And Booker's like, what, the star? You know, and she's like, no, they're gateways to other worlds.
Yeah.
And as you pass through, you're in essentially a opposite Earth. You know, the lighthouses are the stars,
right,
which are infinite gateways, and you see yourself with Elizabeth upon other gateways traveling through other stories. It's just everything sort of comes to a culmination of what I figured out slightly before, that Booker is Comstock.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Comstock if he accepted the baptism,
right?
Because there's different things. The Baptist in the water is the same blind guy from all the way throughout the game,
Well, yeah, the guy that baptizes you at the very beginning of the game is the same guy that baptizes you
at the end.
At the end, yeah.
That's right.
So the baptism at the beginning of the game, like, you're Booker.
But again, the theme is, you know, the mind of the subject will desperately struggle to create memories where none exist. That's the barriers to transdimensional
right.
travel.
Right, and they show that sort of, you know, when they pull him through the window the first time, and he's like...
But that's everywhere, though.
Brings the girl, wipe away the debt, and he's kind of forming these memories.
But that's everywhere. Every time, you know, his nose bleeds, you see all that other stuff.
Yeah.
It's where his mind knows something's wrong, but he's been doing it all the time.
Right.
Because Booker's been in these time things, and he's also not from that time either. He was transported. The baptism could have been something he brought through from the initial years ago when he refused it. Because the Booker that comes through mm-hmm. is the Booker that refused the baptism.
Right.
And he's a gambler and a drinker. And he gave away, well, as you eventually learn, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. who was his daughter, Anna.
Give me back my daughter!
That's right.
That was
a prevalent moment. But it was building that. He just had to say it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and then the whole AD on his hand.
Which was a brand, because he felt guilty.
Yeah.
And, which is alluded to at the beginning, the sign of the
false prophet.
False prophet, that's yeah. right. I feel like there's so much that needs to be said here. Jump in.
Well, I mean, like I said,
like as you pass through, Booker says, you know, we have to kill Comstock, we'll stop the timelines.
And well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that you do right before the final scene, the last thing he says is we got to go back to when Comstock was born and smother the son of a bitch,
that's
right?
That's right.
And then the last door you open up, you're back at the
baptism.
The baptism, right. And he's like, well, wait a minute, what are we doing back here again? Mm-hmm. This isn't the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, you know, you get the multiple Elizabeths showing
that's
up.
That's right. She knew the answer, and that's why she was
well, yeah, like it. I said, once she sort of unlocks... You know, she's enlightened. She says, you know, you go to all these different places and it's like, well, we can't leave this room until you give him the baby.
That's right.
Like
it always ends the same.
Right?
There's so no other choice.
She basically knows all the answers at that point. And I thought it was funny the way that they placed her in the room,
mm-hmm.
depending. And like, she might be there, but if depending on where you were looking.
As soon as you glance away, they shift spots. They actually do that really, really well when you're in the crazy Elizabeth timeline. When you flip one of the switches, and as soon as you turn around, there's one of the Boys of Silence there directly behind you. It scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
But,
Well, and then sometimes you go up a ladder, and Elizabeth's at the top of the ladder waiting for you.
Well, that's sort of a gameplay element to maybe keep her current in things, so she's not following ladders, and you gotta wait and stuff like that. But, yeah, like the theme carries through, and it starts to all make sense with the tears and everything. That... Elizabeth is Booker's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially is Comstock's daughter. He and the Lutesses are someone he brought through to study. But is the female Lutess from his time?
I think so.
Yes, she is.
Absolutely.
But she starts to learn. She learns before he does. But in order to further her research, she buys into his whole prophecy crap because right. his money works.
Sure.
And he received this money from Washington.
Mm.
That's how he builds Columbia. He's rich beyond means. The Comstock Booker changed his life, reformed, became a religious fanatic. So
well, yeah,
to speak.
I mean that's the polar opposite.
Used the Lutess field and their tares to coin himself a prophet with their technology. He could see through the timelines and what would happen
mm-hmm.
and sort of shape it in that way. But also, the Lutess brother. Isn't really her brother at all.
No, it's actually her
in another timeline.
Right.
Which she says the only thing that separates us now is
a
single chromosome.
Yeah,
they are the same.
Absolutely.
Their quips, like in so many ways, they do steal the show.
They do. I mean, I mentioned to you before the ride up.
Yeah.
The cart ride up, and they keep appearing, and one
I did
dancing.
Manage to, hadn't, but I was going to. That's good enough. No.
My favorite one though is when she's standing there with the apple and he's painting.
And he's painting, but it's actually
you go by and you're looking. It's actually he's painting
because
himself.
They're the same though.
Yeah,
they're the same. It doesn't matter. He's her, and she is him.
Yeah, and yet they do have those subtle differences. Like mm-hmm. he does kind of counter argue her sometimes, and
well, they're just heads and tails.
Yeah,
they're both sides of the same coin, yeah. which is a theme that's recurring. But as you, there's always heads and tails to every, like, let's say it starts at a single branch, then there's another branch from there, and it just keeps going.
Well, that's what I mean. Every time you go through a tear, you're creating two branches.
That's right.
So
there's never a beginning and an end until you actually do go to the beginning and the end. Just because you kill Comstock in one timeline, she says there's a thousand Comstocks throughout that can metal. He has the power to metal.
Right.
Right.
Now, I guess one of the sadder points about the ending is that by Booker and Comstock dying, that kind of means that Elizabeth dies in a sense too. Like certain versions of her would die.
Well, yes, and that's the way it, once that bomb is dropped on you, Booker is Comstock. And I just love the way they did it. It's really, really well done with the music and everything.
Oh, it's very tragic, but like satisfying.
And they actually used the original Elizabeth concept in that when all the Elizabeths show up at the baptism.
Right.
They did change, for all those that don't know, they did change the look of her through production of the game. And now, she appears on the left.
Yeah, but I mean, the costume change that she does in the game that people were kind of like, when we first got introduced to the Elizabeth character, she was wearing sort of the corset with the blue dress thing, and people were going on about her being overly sexualized, which I kind of thought was like...
I don't even want to give that any merit. I'm so
exactly,
sick of
it. But what I want,
just like likewise with the violence thing, I think it's so silly.
Yeah,
it seems everyone wants to be offended about something.
But they made such a, like, that was such a pivotal moment in the story when that actually happened. Mm-hmm.
She cuts her hair and takes the Lady Comstock dress.
Yeah, which, you know, she says at the time, you know, it's all that's that all was.
Yeah,
but I mean, yeah, when she cuts her hair and makes that transition, it's. That's major.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of play it off by saying, oh, you know, we don't like this costume because it overly sexualizes this character. Well, I mean, that is so far removed from what they were doing. I mean,
I don't know. I think this is a theme. As games try to do more, they're criticized more. And a way I feel is like, okay, if games never tried to do anything, you would have nothing to criticize. It's like you're criticizing them for daring to achieve.
Yeah.
Which really bothers me, whether it's on a violent scale, whether it's on a sexualized scale, which I think...
To me, it's how you handle it contextually within your game.
Yeah, like there's never anything that's ogling about her. And quite frankly, I mean, there was nothing about that. Never any part that was sexualized about her.
Not sexualized, but I think that I got to the point near the end of the game where you develop a bond, right? And I just felt like I did kind of have like an attachment to my relationship within the game with her, not in a lustful way, but in a compassionate way. In this, like,
yeah,
you're my companion on this journey, and you know we're getting to parts that are now like kind of tragic and sad, and I feel for what this character is going through. So yeah, not in a sexual way at all, but like in a. You know, the way that they portrayed her, like, emotions, she had all these, like...
At some point, she reminded me of a Disney character at times, which...
Like a Disney princess or something?
Like her facial expressions when she's mad at you.
Well, she's got the big doe eyes and too, right? So she kind of has that kind of Disney look to her.
But did a great job. But, you know, in the ending, Booker's Comstock, you wanted the end.
Yeah.
Here's the end. She's going to give it to you by drowning you before it starts. And that's it. And the way it ends with that same piano plays. And every time... No, but as the piano, each piano stroke, and Elizabeth disappears from the timeline. Or an Anna, I should say, at this point. His daughter. Until the credits roll, which is... And it's really powerful. You know, you don't really need much more than that.
You just... You know,
but there's so many questions.
You're rising up, and it's just... Yeah, I mean...
And Levine said this is the one ending he's happy with. He wasn't happy with Bioshock 1's ending.
Hmm.
He wasn't happy with any of the System Shock ending. Because he was able to carry that theme of infinite timelines and physics and things that... Transdimensional borders that really offer up infinite timelines.
Well, yeah. And that's where the ambition of this game lies.
You can figure it out. It's not beyond the graphs. It's not convoluted for convoluted sake.
Yeah.
I really don't think it is. Like, if you follow it and... The only complaint I have with the story is that so much is told in the voxophones that if you were to avoid the voxophones that play through, you would miss so much of the story that the ending would be a punch in the gut.
Yeah. I can see that, but at the same time, it's like, I would hope that most people that are going to play this game are not going to just rush through it and...
Well, you'd hope, but again, how do you cater to both audiences? Well, but again, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to spoil the shit out of this game. Which I think we've done. I don't know. I thought the ending was near perfect. And it's a testament... Well, I mean, it's a testament to how important endings are in
it
games.
It really is. And I mean,
in narrative-driven games.
This is one of the best, if not the best, narratively driven game that I've ever played. And I really still strongly feel like, in over a week after playing it and thinking about it, that I still haven't thought of a game that has a better ending than
this. No, because I'm honestly still thinking about the ending, and I'm asking questions, and how do you digest it and interpret it. There's just so many possibilities out there, and it asks so many questions about even who we are now.
Yeah.
And possibilities that may be and what could have been, and do they live on or do they not, and how do they go on? They go on infinitely.
Yeah.
The questions can happen, but by taking out Booker at the root, supposedly that's supposed to quell the conflict, but what happens to those timelines? You know, do those doors close? Do those lighthouses close? I mean, there are some presumptions made. Why does it always begin with a lighthouse and a man?
Well, because it works for the game.
That's right. I mean, why? Again, in that world, every story begins with that sort of tale. Or they branch in that sort of tale. Or is that the heads and tails moment?
Well, I mean, what's this DLC going to be all about?
Well, they say it has nothing to do with the main character or the main game. They're going to be branching paths. So whether it has something to do with the Fink line, and you know, does it talk about that? Do you play the line of Daisy Fitzroy and the Rebellion of the Vox Populi? Maybe you take that forward, and you know, you're a soldier.
So it's not going to be Booker and Elizabeth in the DLC? No.
That story is done, which I'm very satisfied with.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, I'm a little, like, this makes me even more curious as to what they're going to do, but I was kind of hoping that the DLC was going to have some of these moments that we haven't seen that they presented in these early trailers and stuff like that. Like,
well, they may be. There's no definite answer.
Yeah.
The Terrors, again, present infinite possibilities. But I just love the, you know, they allude to the fact that the Terror technology that Elizabeth and that they're trying to harness has allowed them to advance their civilization as well.
Mm.
You know, they've glimpsed Rapture, which they allude to, which I think is so cool.
That was...
Because
yeah.
Rapture's just another timeline along the same thing. And that's how they get... The technology for the Vigors came from the plasmids. He's able to harness those.
Yeah, I guess so. It's not the other way around.
No. No, he's borrowing from that. But again, maybe in Rapture's timeline, they borrowed technology for something else. Who knows? Like, who knows what Andrew Ryan's thing was? Because it's just, it asks so many great questions that don't really need answering, though. Like, these are questions that you continue to ask, and you're like...
But it makes, and that keeps the whole universe interesting and
the
fun.
Essential answers are there.
Yeah.
We know how that Comstock was created. We know who Elizabeth is. We know who Booker is.
Yeah.
And we know how he got there. And how...
Yeah, that story is very tight. They don't really leave a lot of loose ends on things that are, like, really important.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I can't think of anything that's not really...
And they even cover up the gray areas with that line that I spouted earlier. Mm-hmm. The mind of the subject desperately struggled to create memories where none exist.
Yeah.
Because anything that you made, you're like, how could this happen? Because he's just making it up. Well, the brain is filling in the blanks.
And even the Lutes brother says that's what he went through.
He went through, yes.
You know? So he's not fully his pure self either, you know?
But she makes it her mission to make him right.
Right.
Which she does, more or less.
Yeah.
And see, but they've gone through infinite timelines. Has, hasn't, has. I don't know.
Right.
Explain it. Yeah. Did. Dying. Did, didn't. I don't know.
Is going
it's
to.
It's just so
whatever.
Cool.
Yeah. And I mean, we've already mentioned, but those the quips between those two and the performance is so well done.
But there is the hidden scene after the credits, which hints to a happy ending of sorts in a certain timeline. He holds it, reverts back to almost he has the knowledge of the timelines.
Well,
at that point,
he just opens the door
of Booker. No, but he holds the baby, right?
I didn't get that.
Yeah. Well, no, he it shows the baby, and he opens the door.
Well, I thought that you just heard the crying, and then he opens the door, and it ends at that point. I don't remember holding the baby.
That's right. No, you're right. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it alludes to a happy ending.
Sure.
But it gives you... It doesn't give you that. You know?
Or just, you know, it shows you a glimpse into a universe where, yeah, he didn't give up.
Mm-hmm. Or who knows? Maybe that is... The it's just the beginning of the story again.
Yeah,
it's you don't know.
Yeah,
which is great. It's great storytelling.
And I wasn't expecting that either. Mm. You know, it's like oh, a little thing at the end here. And
so overall, what do you think? Like, it's an ending that's going to stay with me for
absolutely
a really long time.
And like I said, it's one of the best endings of any game I've ever played. In fact, maybe the best.
And again, it's a testament to endings in narrative-driven games and how important they are, and that. I've heard excuses for other various games, which I won't get into specifics of, that it's all about the journey and the ending doesn't matter. I completely disagree with that.
Oh, no, that's not... No, you want... You need to have...
The payoff has to be there.
Yeah, it has to be
there.
And
it was there.
I mean, I think the only thing that I wanted to throw in there, if I can... If I don't lose my train of thought now, which I think I just did. I had something and then you...
Final thoughts. Go ahead.
Oh, crap. I've seriously lost my train of thought.
Please don't say that.
Oh my god. That's pathetic.
I'm reading over your notes right now.
Most of those are just little quotes.
Mm-hmm.
But
I love the soundtrack. I love the world. Overall, the game... This game's destined to be what is called overrated.
Oh, I know what I was going to say.
Let me just finish before we forget. You got it now, right?
Yeah, I got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's not hope Donovan forgets his train of thought. It's destined to be overrated. People will say this game's overrated.
Well,
but I really don't think
a better way to look at it is it going to be overly dissected or just highly dissected? I mean...
I don't know. I just think a lot of people were like, the story's not everything it's cracked up to be, but it really is.
It really is.
It pays off in so many different ways that even the shortcomings of the gameplay that you may have thought... The payoff of the end of what this game is going to do, it accomplishes.
I kind of feel like if somebody has that opinion, where they don't think the narrative was well
done, I don't think they're mature enough to do
it. I think that maybe some of it went over their head.
And I really do. And that's not... Yes.
I'm not trying to insult you.
No, I'm not. But I really think when you look at... And maybe go online and watch some YouTube videos from... There's professors of physics out there that have dissected the ending.
Oh, that's awesome.
And there's 30-minute videos that I've watched that deal with the timelines and how the lines and even the... But the theme is so consistent. Now, don't forget your train of thought,
by
the way.
All I was going to say was... We were talking about a week ago where you were saying, well, gameplay trumps everything... Like gameplay is the most important thing.
It is, but that doesn't
mean... In a case like BioShock, and because of how strong the narrative is in this one, I'm going to say in a case for this that the story trumps...
Yeah, but I don't think the gameplay is like shit.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And that's what,
Now, if the game played like absolute shit... Now, I don't want to get into all this because we're... By the way, please tune into our episode proper after this of Grizzled Veterans, which we'll do a full review of the game for the most part. But I don't think the gameplay was terrible.
No.
My only point is that the gameplay is awful. It's really hard for me to go through a story. And BioShock Infinite by no means had terrible gameplay.
Yeah. It could have used some tweaks, but hey.
Yes, you're in there, but every game can. But again, we'll get to that in the episode proper. I don't want to convolute the issue of the spoiler kind of
thing. But yeah, that was the point I was trying to make.
But from the Chain Unbroken song, really everything reinforces that theme that the team has put forward in this game. That song, Can You Break the Chain, that infinite chain that's going on with the story and the timeline.
Well, and if you think back to BioShock 1, there's that metaphor there with the chain, you know, like keep the chain going.
That's right. It does specifically.
And actually, if you... I when I played the ending the second time and I saw the Big Daddy and the little sister off in the distance there, and if you look up, there's that banner that talks about the, you know, keeping the chain going.
Oh, in the first game.
Yeah. So
I think we've pretty much closed everything without sounding like we're rambling, maybe we are now, but I think the game, from a story and narrative-driven aspect, was wonderful. I really think it's deserving of all the accolades it's been given. And I'm extremely critical about this stuff, yeah. Especially about endings. After so many endings have let me down, and I actually had the build-up of this, and I was actually prepared for the game to let me down, because I'm like that, whatever, I'm a critic.
Yeah.
But it didn't. I actually, it exceeded my expectations of what an ending should be.
I was almost late for work a couple days, because it was so hard to put down.
Mm.
So, yeah.
All in all, it's a must play. Hopefully you enjoyed Spoiler Cast here. Our second, if you haven't listened to our first one, is the Mass Effect 3 Spoiler Cast,
yep.
Which will be on our stream, or our host, I should say, at Podomatic.
Archive.
Yes. Which we're working on adjusting.
Yes.
This one was about little willy-nilly. I think it was a bit...
We went a little bit all over the place, but hey.
It's hard to get a grip on a thing. Do you start with the ending?
Yeah.
And then juxtapose it with everything that happened through the game? Yeah. I don't know. Is that what you do? I don't know. We did it on the fly. I think we did an okay job.
I think we did.
But thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. This has been our spoiler cast for BioShock Infinite. Intimate.
Yeah.
With Infinite.
You say, we try.